And good morning, NASCAR fans. Welcome to Green White Checkered here on ESPN Radio. PJ Zucco, Brandon Bain here with you as we get set for the Dryden 400 from Dover later today. Another exciting and fun race on the NASCAR Cup schedule and an important one as well as we get closer and closer to race 26 and the NASCAR playoffs. But before that, got to look back at last week and NASCAR's throwback race there from Darlington on Mother's Day. And I'll tell you what, Martin Truex Jr., he put the competition to sleep. He might have put some people to sleep on their couches there last week as he dominates the Goodyear 400 from Darlington. He swept the first two stages of the race, led 248 laps total. No one else led more than 10 laps and wins the third race of the season. Still the only multiple race winning driver of this year, as everyone else that has won only has one win. Martin Truex Jr. grabbing his third. And Brandon, that reminded me a lot of the 2016 Coca-Cola 600, honestly, where Truex led 392 of 400 laps. He had that dominating performance once again, and both times had that flat black paint scheme that he was sporting here in the throwback race. But such a dominant race for Truex Jr. And, you know, I feel like he's been kind of underrated, under-talked about over the past few weeks, and I feel like this is just putting everyone on blast, kind of saying, listen, if you want to win races or a championship in 2021, you're going to have to go through Martin Truex Jr.
Yeah, definitely, PJ. I mean, you hit the nail on the head right there, brother. I mean, you know, watching what he's been doing and getting those race wins the first couple, we were like, all right, you know, first multi-winner of the season, you know, looking pretty good. Still had some other guys out there. You're like, man, those guys are really good as well. But I think this past week just goes to show what direction they're headed over there at JGR. You know, Truex coming out, as you said, leading 240-plus laps of a 260-something lap race. I mean, he absolutely dominated it, man, and to come out, you know, sweep every stage, huge payoff for those playoff you know, points that we know become so important here, you know, down the road this season. But yeah, to watch what he did, man, and you know, not only to mention that, if you run through the field and kind of look at what everybody else did that that JGR, I mean, you had three of the drivers finishing right there inside the top five, with Kyle Busch coming home third, and you know, Denny Hamlin rounding out that top five there. I mean, those guys, you know, we've seen the consistency out of Hamlin, not so much the race wins. And you see Kyle Busch got his win, starting to build a little bit of his momentum. You know, that's the guy that we always say, I think if you give him an inch, he'll take a mile. And I think they kind of woke the bear up a little bit there, mm-hmm. with letting him get that win, and definitely going to get some things together. But when we're talking just pure dominance right now, I mean, it the first guy that comes to mind is Martin Truex. I mean, it just, like you said, it's reminiscent of, you know, the Coca-Cola race in 16 where he just dominated, and it's almost reminiscent of, you know, a championship year he had. And then, you know, today here we are headed into, you know, one of his better racetracks throughout his career, and not only that, it's definitely a spot that means something to him, a track that means something to him. It's where he got his first win. So, you know, with that being said, I mean, I think that they're just got their stuff together. You know, it goes to show you, you know, when Truex lost Cole Pearn as his crew chief, you know, I thought that was going to be a big impact because of just the history and how many race wins they had together. But I tell you what, you turn around and see what they're doing now as a crew, and man, I tell you what, I don't think they really missed a beat. So it's going to be definitely interesting going forward in the season to see if anybody else, you know, can catch up. Anybody else can, you know, start having the consistency and the, you know, dominating race cars that he has, and getting the finishes that he does. So, you know, like we talk, you know, Kyle Larson is one of those guys that we look at, has really fast race cars, but he's just not quite able to get the finishes that Truex has. And, you know, there again, second place finish coming home at Darlington this past weekend, and throwback weekend, and you know, came up through there late, man, but I think he just kind of used him up trying to get up to Truex, or you know, maybe a little cat and mouse, you know how that goes. Truex might have been laying off a little bit and letting him burn those tires up, man. But either way, what a great throwback weekend, you know, on Mother's Day there at Darlington. You know, another piece of NASCAR history made, man, and just big congrats to Martin Truex on that win.
Yeah, such a special weekend, Mother's Day as well there at Darlington, and that was wild. Yeah, Kyle Larson, not sure if that was a cat and mouse game or him using his stuff up. It seemed like he did dive into the corner a little bit too hard on a few of those laps where it seemed like he had a chance, so I feel like he overdrove it a little bit. But then after the race, he said he was holding back a little bit and wanted to save his stuff for later because he felt like he was going to get another opportunity. So confusing on what exactly happened with Kyle Larson. Still comes home with a top two finish, but Martin Truex Jr. drives away and gets the victory there at Darlington. And now while we're on the subject of Truex, did want to mention, I mean, I feel like underappreciating and undervaluing his racing ability is kind of been a theme of his career, right? I feel like at some point we're going to look back on Martin Truex Jr. and realize how great of a driver he is. I mean, you look at his track, was in some rough equipment. Let's be honest, at DEI there in their later years, still was able to elevate his team and get a victory and do good things. Michael Waltrip Racing gets some pretty good equipment, goes on, wins races, finishes top 10s, moves on to Furniture Row Racing, which, you know, was up and down a single car team. And even when they were in a Chevy, he was winning races and elevating that team, finishing in the top 10, things like that. I just feel like a lot of people kind of look at Martin Truex Jr. and say, well, he's in great equipment now with JGR. Of course he's winning all these races. But I feel like it's a lot bigger than that. I feel like when we look back on his entire career, his whole body of work, and however many championships and wins that he'll have, we're going to look back and say, man, Martin Truex Jr. was one of the greats, was one of the great drivers in NASCAR history. Maybe not up there with Earnhardt and Petty and Johnson, of course, but one of the great ones when it comes to getting behind the wheel and getting great finishes and wins with whatever equipment he had.
Yeah, 100% PJ. I mean, you know, it's funny to sit here and especially as NASCAR fans, you know, we get involved in these guys that, you know, just come out of the gate and they're just phenomenal. You know, they go out and get wins earlier in their career and they never stop winning. You know, the Jeff Gordons and Kyle Busches and, you know, just that's what we were used to. And for a guy like Martin Truex and you know, another guy that comes to my mind when we talk about later career, you know, surges is Kevin Harvick. You know, not that he didn't have his wins early in his career, but it seemed like here in the later parts of his career is like where the majority of the wins are coming from and the consistency and the championship run. So, you know, when you talk about Martin Truex, I think that, you know, a lot of people, you know, that have been watching the sport for so many years still consider it like the days of the DEI, like, oh, you know, he's a good race car driver, decent equipment, but doesn't quite have it all figured out and this and that. But at the end of the day, I mean, he's got every box checked. He's got the championship, you know, and to go from multiple teams the way he has and multiple manufacturers and different equipment styles and the way that operations are run at different places and still have the success and the consistency that he has had, it speaks volumes. You know, we have a lot of guys, I mean, that are career guys. You know, you look at you know, a prime example, Jeff Gordon. I mean, he's got every single career win that he has is with one organization, different crew chiefs, but one organization, man. So, you know, there's different trials and tribulations that different drivers go through, and that's something that I think today we don't appreciate enough. One, not only where the talent level is and the guys that they're racing against week in and week out, and how much harder it is to get the win now. But not only that, you know, the behind-the-scenes struggles of going through and, like I said, whether you're switching teams or you switch a manufacturer or you get a new crew chief, all those are factors in having to rebuild that team. And I think Martin Truex is one of the best ones at doing it. It seems like, you know, whether there again it's a manufacturer or whether it's a crew chief, they figure with him it seems to get figured out pretty quick. So I agree 100% with you. When it's all said and done, and Truex, you know, career is over, Martin Truex decides to hang it up, I think the name's definitely going to come up in a lot more conversations of really good race car drivers, you know, and it's something that I think for now we kind of take it for granted. You kind of look at it and it's like, oh, he just got another win, you know, oh, well, he just did this. I mean, in the past few years we're used to seeing that, but like you said, at the end of the day, when that career is all said and done and we go back and you start talking about Martin Truex Jr., you know, I think a lot of things are going to come up in a lot more people going to have appreciation for what he's done, you know, not only to mention the personal, you know, struggles and tribulations that he's gone through, you know, with his longtime girlfriend or fiance, you know, having cancer twice now. So, you know, to have a man that not only has a career in the public eye and in, you know, a national level sport as NASCAR, but also to have to go out and race every single week knowing that, you know, the person you love, your significant other, is going through even a bigger battle. So, inspiration. I'm sure it inspired him huge, and just what a great guy. And like I said, at the end of the day, when that career is all said and done, man, I think he's going to go down definitely as one of the greats, a legend of the sport for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Love you mentioned the fact Sherry Pollock's his longtime girlfriend, everything they've been through together. That has certainly been a driving force in Martin Truex Jr.'s life. And also, NASCAR, a team sport just like anything else. And what does a great player do in other team sports? They make the people around him better. And I feel like Martin Truex Jr., just like you said, has done that at every single team he's been at, taking them to the next level. And now with JGR, he's just doing more of the same. But we'll come back. Some big news with NASCAR's next-gen vehicles being released with Toyota, Chevy, and Ford. Of course, some big talking points when it comes to the technical side of it as well. We'll come back, talk about that here on Green White Checkered on ESPN Radio. And welcome back. It's Green White Checkered here on ESPN Radio. PJ Zucco, Brandon Bain getting you set for Dover later today. But, of course, every Wednesday, check out Rubbin' and Grubbin' from Coach's Corner every Wednesday night at 6 with our guy Brandon Bain. We'll catch you up on all the midweek NASCAR news and get you set for the races there every single weekend. If you can't make it to Coach's Corner every Wednesday night at 6, be sure to tune in to the Coach's Corner Facebook live feed or ESPN Radio's Facebook live feed as well for Rubbin' and Grubbin' every Wednesday at 6. But Brandon, of course, NASCAR unveiling their next gen vehicles that Chevy, Toyota, and Ford will use moving forward, starting in 2022. And a lot of talking points for sure, from what these cars look like to the technical side of things as well. A lot of changes to these cars, and I certainly can't wait to see how they drive. But at the end of the day, some of the biggest talking points and changes are, number one, NASCAR now incorporating many common parts manufactured by 30 single source suppliers rather than teams building the components themselves. So NASCAR outsourcing some of those materials, that's been a talking point between drivers and teams, no doubt about it. One of the other big talking points, now NASCAR using different wheels and rims, but also a single center locking lug nut there for those tires that will certainly change a lot of things. And from an image standpoint, at least I feel like there's a positive there with these cars looking a lot more like a souped up version of the makes and models that you see on an everyday street driving down the road. So I feel like that a positive change, but certainly a lot of technical changes to go over along with those big ones we just mentioned. Brandon, what jumps off the page to you, and what do you think about NASCAR unveiling these next-gen cars?
Yeah, I mean, for me, PJ, this is something, has been in the news and the works for the last couple of years. We as a fan, you kind of tend to go, oh, okay, we're bringing in another gen car, and here we go. And, it like you said, it's reminiscent of bringing the Car of Tomorrow out. Now, the one thing I will say is, we all saw how that worked out, and I think that cost NASCAR quite a few, diehard fans in a way, Car of Tomorrow did,
sure.
Just from the changes that they made and the way that car raced compared to the gen before, and not only that, now the generations after. It's one of those things where, NASCAR is always trying to, better the sport, better the teams, make the sport more equal, on equal ground. At the end of the day, for me, I'm kind of torn. I'm ready to see what this car is going to do. I know it's got a lot of new safety features, but you said one of the main key parts in the fact that, they outsourced the development and manufacturing of parts. And to me, as a NASCAR fan, that is kind of the bread and butter for these big money teams, because you pay the engineers that are on your team, however many that you have, this amount of money to, build these parts to try to be better than your opposition. And especially when you're in-house and building those, whether it be brakes or whether it be suspension parts or whatever it may be that NASCAR allows you to actually build in-house or did. That's where you kind of make your bread. That's where these engineers make their living and make their name, and the teams kind of develop. So I don't like the fact that they're outsourcing that. I think it's going to cause some problems down the road as we go. If we get into a spell where a certain part from that this one company makes, and you're talking Chevy, Toyota, and Ford's all have problems with it, whether it be a brake or a mechanical issue, at the end of the day, when parts start breaking and they're outsourced, you are going to hear a lot of teams and drivers definitely complain and start griping about what's going on. So I think it's going to be something that we're going to have to see how that goes, how well they're inspected, how well they're manufactured, and what kind of R&D goes into actually making these parts. But you also alluded to something that I absolutely oppose and I am totally against. And that is the single locking lug in the center of the wheels. I know that they put a wider tire on these cars, more grip as far as actual tire surface instead of more mechanical grip through the chassis or through the way they set these cars up. But to me, you just eliminated one of the biggest human factors in the sport and what makes it a team sport to me. You know, you have these guys that train, on your pit crew for years to be the best at what they do, changing these tires out. Now, that's not saying that with this one center lug, it's going to change some things. They still have to obviously go out there and change the tires and fuel the car and everything that goes along with a pit stop. But I just feel like you're kind of taking a little bit more of the human error factor out. And what builds that characteristics as a team. And, you've had these teams over the year goes, man, I tell you what, it's kind of like Kyle Busch. Now, Kyle Busch's pit crew is one of the best in the sport. So when he comes in and you watch them do their work, I mean, it's absolutely flawless 9 times out of 10. So, just something else I think they're going to have to take a look at. The way the cars look, I mean, I definitely love the fact that you can tell, the Chevy Camaro and the Ford Mustang and the Toyota Camry all apart. As you said, PJ, they look a lot like, a lot more like what you go and buy from, the dealership. And I mean, that's kind of something that NASCAR has lost compared to the old school, roots of it, to where pretty much you were running stock cars that you built. So I do like that. I'm very interested to see how it's going to race, not only with the suspension changes they've made, the aerodynamic changes they've made, but I really want to see how much it's equal to playing field for some of these, lesser finance teams. I mean, I feel like the cars that we have now over the last few years, the racing has only gotten better. So it's definitely, if we can pick it up from where we're at now and make it better than that, I'm definitely going to be down with the car. But I think that something else that NASCAR has to look at is, there again, these major teams pay millions of dollars, corporations to build parts and to have these engineers. So when you set a standard guideline of rules and what these cars are going to be, it's only going to be a couple years down the road where these engineers figure out how to get more out of these race cars. So it's going to be something that I want to see evolve. I definitely want to see what we're going to move forward to. To me, there again, we've seen multiple generations, as yourself as PJ, watching the sport for so long. So you watch the cars go from, all these different generations and the looks, and then a new one gets revealed, and you're like, oh, it doesn't even really look like a NASCAR. So to me, when they revealed it, I was like, oh, it's a really neat-looking car. I think that NASCAR did an amazing job, marketing it out there, and with the, unveiling of the new car, I think they did a great job on that. But as I said, to me, it just doesn't quite look like that old school NASCAR look. It looks more like, to me, to be honest, it looks more like a touring, car that you would see doing a lot of road course racing overseas somewhere. So it's just going to be different to see what they do. I know that they did this to try to, make it cheaper on every team, obviously, because of, we know how expensive this sport is. You're building new cars for every racetrack, or you might have one that you use at a couple. But other than that, you were building new cars week in and week out. So it'll be interesting to see what it does financially for these teams. But until they get out on the track and they put, 40 cars out there, they run in a pack, and we get to see actually what this racing is like and how much more it puts the drivability of these cars back into the driver's hands. Right now, all it is a look and theory, man. So I'm ready, excited for, next season, get these cars on the track, get some driver feedback, maybe make some adjustments over the first couple seasons to try to get something locked down. That's definitely going to be a little bit better racing and better for fans. That at the end of the day, that's what it's all about: safety of the drivers, safety of the crew members, man, but also putting on a great show for the fans that show up on Sundays and tune in on Sundays. So going to be interesting to see, man, but we got a whole another season. We got to get through this one, man, and get to Daytona next year.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I feel like that's one of my biggest concerns as well. You got these big swings that NASCAR takes with these new cars every time they come out with one, and sometimes it's an out, sometimes it's a home run. And it's hard to find the ones that are middle of the road that are just, you know, a great line drive. So we'll see what happens there. Hopefully it's a home run. It's very interesting for sure. I can't wait to see how these cars drive with each other on the track, because at this point it's only been one, you know, test run, and you see little clips here and there. I want to see how they actually drive against each other and what the racing looks like. I feel like the safety and the racing are, at the end of the day, the two most important things. You want to entertain fans while also, you know, reward drivers and teams for being the best, for going out there, having the best car and a best driver on the track on that given Sunday or that given day. So we'll see how those cars are able to provide that to these teams. But with anything, as you mentioned, the image of the cars, yeah, I think they look really good. At the same time, I know what you're saying. It looks like a version of a car you would see maybe drive the Rolex 24, right, at Daytona, or even a supercar. It looks a little bit like a supercar without the huge spoiler. And at the end of the day, at least from an image standpoint, and we'll see from a driving aspect, it's not too much of a swing, I don't think. It's not the car of tomorrow, which is really what I feared. We'll see if the driving is like that, but the safety is better for sure. Enjoy that. The single lug is certainly going to change pit stops and how they go in the future. Again, I want to see that in action and see how much these pit stops are changed. I'm sure it's going to be quite a bit, but you know, the main thing that concerns me in the other side of this outsourcing materials thing is we've seen great progress from equipment building in NASCAR. It's very rare nowadays that you see a blown engine or something like that during a race. And that's something that even in the mid-2000s, we saw very much of. And that's kind of gone by the wayside. Well, now you have these bigger companies that have really built their respective empires on providing these materials. And now you kind of take that away from them. Well, obviously, they're not going to feel great about that, especially when you move forward. And possibly some of these outsourced materials could be faulty. Right? I think back to 2017, 2018, when NASCAR implemented the change of providing air guns for pit stops to the teams rather than bringing their own. And you saw the first 9, 10, 11 races, several faulty air guns that cost drivers huge points and huge positions because they had faulty air guns and that ruined their pit stop. Now, does that happen with some of this other equipment, and especially important equipment that's in the inner workings of the car? That worries me quite a bit, and we'll see what kind of bumps and bruises NASCAR takes when this next-gen car comes. Hopefully, it's a lot more positives than negatives, and we'll see when they get on the track in 2022. But as for 2021, we'll come back. We'll talk about Dover and the Drydene 400 later today. That's when we come back here on Green White Checkered on ESPN Radio. And welcome back. It's Green White Checkered here on ESPN Radio. PJ Zucco, Brandon Bain here with you. Be sure to go out to Coach's Corner or tune into Coach's Corner's Facebook live feed every Wednesday night at 6 for Rubbin' and Grubbin' with Brandon Bain as well. But Brandon, we have the Drydene 400 from Dover later today. We'll see if we have another clean race like last week, or if Miles the Monster reaches up and snags some of these cars and makes it a little bit more messy. But either way, Brandon, who do you think goes out there, grabs a victory, or has some great finishes at Dover?
Yeah, I tell you what, PJ, Dover is one of my favorite races of the year, man. It's such a unique track. I know me and you have had conversations where you know, I know it's a track that you guys love and means a lot to your family as well.
Absolutely.
But man, what a cool racetrack. You know, 24 degrees, man, concrete, mile track. We got a 400 lap race today. Man, and you said it, Miles the Monster, man. I mean, what a cool trophy. And not only that, I mean, what a cool name, because we all know that, you know, they're at Dover. Over, man, you can definitely lose your car really quick. So if you're talking five guys, I mean, we talked about the guy earlier, man. I mean, number one on the list today has to be Martin Truex, right? I mean, three wins, you know, swept all the stages last week, going to one of his better tracks here at Dover. I think he's won three wins there in his career. I know he got his first one there. And I tell you what, man, you know, five different race winners in five, the last five races at Dover. So you never know what you're going to get. But if we're betting on it, man, you got to take Truex first. I think that just the dominance that they're showing at JG AGR. Not only that, he gets to start out front today from the pole position. So that's going to pay dividends, man. I think that we're going to see a great race, but I got to take him first. Second for me, another guy that we talked about, another runner-up finish there for Kyle Larson last week at Darlington. I think Dover, if he can stay out of trouble, get that upper groove rubbered up, man, they get running up there, he could definitely be a factor here later on in that race. Just the drivability that he has and the way that he handles the race car on these style tracks is just amazing, man. And led a lot of laps so far, had a lot of equipment, hasn't quite got the finishes that we would expect, but today could be a day. You know, my top five is going to be Hendrick Heavy this week. I'm going to go ahead and let everybody know, man. Three for me has got to be William Byron. Just beat my guy Jeff Gordon and, you know, the youngest to do 10 straight top 10s, beat him by a few months there. Big dividends. I think when you talk about consistency and you talk about, a guy that's definitely putting good runs together in the Hendrick camp or Chevy in general, it's got to be William Byron first. Got that win at Miami. Still rolling strong from that, man. So can he go out and get another top 10 today or maybe get another win? I think it's definitely possible there at Dover for him. Four for me, as I said, Hendrick Heavy's got to be Chase Elliott. One of his better racetracks. I think he's only had a couple bad finishes here in his career. There again, another guy that can definitely go out and get the job done. And I think it's one of a couple guys that has to go out and get a win here soon. Not only for the playoff picture, but for team morale. I mean, running consistent's one thing, but we all like to win. That's what we work for. So I think, between him and a couple other drivers that got to go out and get that win. And rounding out the top five, man, I got to throw him in there. It's got to be Denny Hamlin again. Dover hadn't been exactly one of his better places to be. He got that win there last season, a little bit of a shorter race than what we're used to seeing at Dover, but got that win. There again, another guy that really needs a win for team morale. Today could be the day for that 11 Joe Gibbs Racing team as well. And then we get to a dark horse, man. I'm kind of torn. I want to go Hendrick 48 with Bowman. That's not much of a dark horse pick. He's got a win this year. Been running pretty decent, so we'll go a little bit deeper, and we'll go to Chris Buescher this week, man. I think Roush over the last few weeks have had really good runs between him and Ryan Newman. They got some momentum building up over there, and I think this is definitely a racetrack that he can go out and get another good top 10 finish and move himself up in those playoff pictures or put himself right there inside, man. So 48 Alex Bowman, like I said, definitely probably going to have a good run, but I definitely keep an eye out on that 17 of Chris Buescher over there at Roush Racing, man, and see what they can't do today.
Yeah, for sure. I like that pick a lot. Like you said, Roush has had some great finishes with Ryan Newman and Chris Buescher the last few weeks, and they've kept their nose out of trouble for sure with staying out of wrecks and things like that and getting some solid top 10s. Fort Dover have a similar top 5, but not completely similar. Martin Truex Jr., number 1, not only the track he got his first win at, but as a New Jersey guy, really the closest thing to a home racetrack he has there in Dover, Delaware, and a track he is obviously insanely good at, and he's starting from the pole. We'll see if we get another snooze fest, and Martin Truex dominates later today. Number 2, finished second last week, and with the team as strong as they are and as well as he's been running, this is also one of his best tracks, Kyle Larson, as he has the top average finish of anyone at this track with a 7.4, has a win there at Dover as well. Give me Kyle Larson in my number 2 spot. Number 3, if you asked me this 5-6 weeks ago, he wouldn't have been in my top 5 at all, even with how good he is at Dover. But Kyle Busch, like you said, they've kind of poked the bear a little bit and woke him up. Got that solid win, and he's been very consistent lately. Give me Kyle Busch. He's been finishing races, which is the important thing, and finishing strong. So give me Kyle Busch there in the 3 spot. Number 4, Chase Elliott. Some great races here at Dover. When he's able to get out front, normally he sets sail and says goodbye to people. Has had some great runs here, even going back to when he was in the 24 car battling it out with Kyle Larson in the 42, and Matt Kenseth, I believe, in the 20 car, had a couple great battles there at Dover early in his career and has been very good here ever since. In my 5th spot, just like you said, it'd be so weird to keep Denny Hamlin out of this list, so he's got to be on there. He is good at Dover, but he's so hit or miss. miss. If he's not in the top 10 or winning a race, he's either wrecking or something like that. But either way, don't trust him a ton at Dover, but give me Denny Hamlin at 5. My dark horse for today, how about Daniel Suarez in the 99? A 13.8 average finish here at Dover and 4 top 10s over his career. Give me Daniel Suarez as my dark horse for today. But for Brandon Bain, I am PJ Zucco. This has been Green White Checkered on ESPN Radio every Sunday from 9 to 9:30. Be sure to tune into the Dryden 400 from Dover later today. Hope you have a great rest of your race day, and God bless.